Welcome to ACC's CardiaCast. I'm Ty Gluckman, Medical Director of the Center for Cardiovascular Analytics, Research, and Data Science at the Providence Heart Institute in Portland, Oregon. And today I'm interviewing Dr. Nihar Desai on how cardiovascular clinicians can leverage the power of real-world data and real-world evidence to improve care. This is the second episode in a series of three recorded at the New York Cardiovascular Symposium in December of 2019. This episode was made possible with support from Janssen Pharmaceuticals. Nihar, it's a pleasure to have you here. Could you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Thanks, Ty. It's great to be with you. My name's Nihar Desai. I'm an associate professor at the Yale School of Medicine, associate chief of cardiovascular medicine, and an investigator at the Center for Outcomes Research and Evaluation.
Fantastic. And Nihar, we were fortunate enough to hear you give a great presentation on leveraging real-world data and evidence in real-world clinical practice, focusing in on the opportunities and challenges that exist. Can you give our listeners just a brief overview of the types of things that you talked about?
Sure, Ty. So there's a emerging interest in real-world evidence, whether that's from regulators and FDA, or researchers, and maybe even policymakers and payers. And I think that we sort of are at this moment where we need to figure out, how do we generate high-quality real-world evidence that can actually be meaningful to stakeholders and answer important clinical questions, helping to inform clinical practice, advance our clinical practice, and actually drive better care.
That's fantastic. And one of the things that you had covered in your presentation were the varied data sources by which we might be able to understand performance or gaps in care that may be the drivers of quality improvement initiatives, et cetera. Can you talk a little bit about where these data sources may exist? And maybe there's just more than one. There are a number of data sources that can help inform this.
Yeah, it's a great point, Ty. So there is a diversity of real-world data assets, whether we think about clinical registries, administrative claims data, electronic health record data, and others. And I think one of the key aspects of generating high-quality real-world evidence is to really tailor the data set you have, the question that you have, and apply a very rigorous methodology to kind of get to an appropriate answer, if you will. In terms of, you know, one of the key sort of use cases for real-world data or real-world evidence is to study contemporary patterns of care, or to identify disparities or opportunities to improve the quality of care. I think clinical registries, including those that are run by the ACC, the National Cardiovascular Data Registry, for example, are truly national treasures in that they collect large amounts of data that's nationally representative and give us real insight into what's happening in regular clinical care, what's happening in the world around us. Of course, we need clinical trials that are establishing best practices and giving us a sense of, you know, what is safety and efficacy for the drugs and devices and strategies that we are going to employ. But then we need to have just as robust and rigorous a kind of an assessment of what's happening in real-world practice. Are people applying that evidence? Are people bringing those therapies to the bedside that were evaluated in those trials?
So one of the things that I think about when I see a randomized clinical trial published is, does the patient sitting in front of me in clinic or the patient sitting in front of me in the hospital, would they have been enrolled in that trial overall? And I think one of the things that you nicely highlighted in your presentation is that there's often a gap or a delta between those people enrolled in clinical trials and the people that we study. Maybe you could share a few ideas about how real-world evidence could be helpful in either affirming or refuting what we might be seeing when it's applied in a more real-world setting.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think, you know, while the traditional randomized trial is the gold standard for evaluating efficacy and safety, it occurs in a highly scripted environment, highly selected sites, carefully selected patients, and they may or may not be representative or reflective of regular clinical practice. As you said, the patients that we see every day in the office or in the hospital. And so one of the examples that we gave was, you know, there were a number of clinical trials establishing the efficacy and safety of the novel oral anticoagulants compared to warfarin for patients with atrial fibrillation. And I think while those trials clearly demonstrated that the DOACs are have a benefit in terms of reducing ischemic complications and reducing major bleeding events, the question has always come up of, well, how would these therapies perform in unselected populations in regular clinical practice. And so, you know, one of the studies that we highlighted in the session was the Aristophanes set of studies. And what they did there was they took clinical administrative data from four insurers, nearly 300,000 patients, to actually look at how are these drugs performing in regular real-world practice. I think a particular point of importance for Aristophanes was there were more patients that were elderly, more females, patients with higher CHAD scores and higher HazBled scores than were enrolled in any of the phase three clinical trials. And so again, to your point, probably getting patients that are more commensurate with what we see in our routine clinical practice. And importantly, Aristophanes actually showed that each of the therapies, each of the novel anticoagulants, performed quite similarly in this large real-world analysis as they did in the clinical trial. I think practitioners should be quite reassured to say, in a large data set using administrative data, the therapy seemed to be performing just as they did in the clinical trial.
I think you nicely summarized the fact that it can often affirm what we've seen in a RCT, but expanded to a more real-world population for who, in fact, is sitting in front of me. I can imagine our listeners thinking and saying, there are a bunch of real-world evidence studies that are out there. How do I begin to critically or maybe casually think about this is a well-done real-world evidence study versus this is not? What kind of general guidance of thoughts or approaches that are taken in terms of study design might help to inform this is a better done study or one that you may not want to put as much stock in?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think the underlying point is a very important one, that we have seen an explosion of these types of analyses and manuscripts and publications, and so it really is on the clinical community to have a thoughtful eye when they are reviewing the literature. Now, of course, we have peer review that's, you know, very high quality at our medical journals that has kind of done a very important part of that already. But for the reader, I think you have to ask yourself a number of questions. One is the clinical question that's being asked appropriate for real-world evidence generation? Is the data set something that is reliable? Is it valid? What is the source? And then I think most importantly, and I think something that many of us struggle with, myself included, is the statistical methodology and the approach, one that really accounts for the biases that we have to think about with regard to real-world evidence generation. And so, you know, again, this is an instance where having a critical eye, really looking closely at the methods, and then thinking broadly about what was the question, what is the data source, and is the statistical methodology then appropriate for the question and the data set, is really helpful.
So pivoting a little bit in direction, we've seen the FDA, both on the drug and device side, begin to expand from a regulatory standpoint its either expanded indications or review that would incorporate real-world evidence. You highlighted that, in fact, registries or looking at performance of devices may give us additional information. Just a few thoughts about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is an important area where, you know, regulators and the FDA specifically have expressed a lot of interest in examining the performance of drugs or devices, again, in unselected settings in real-world practice. Most recently, there was some work that came out about a year ago surrounding the Impella RP device, a device that's used to support the right ventricle in patients with shock. The device was approved, was available on the market. In post-approval studies, in a real-world analysis, the FDA actually found a higher rate of mortality than had been reported in the pre-approval studies. And a Dear Doctor letter was circulated to the clinical community to sort of inform them of that. Again, that's not to say that not anything specific about this device, but I think the broader point is that FDA is increasingly looking at ways that they can conduct surveillance of devices, and that real-world data sources are one important element of that. I'll tell you, you know, another very interesting example of that was the HeartMate 2 ventricular assist device, where a quality improvement intervention, actually at a single institution, identified a potential safety concern. They, to their credit, talked to a couple of collaborative institutions who all used the same EHR platform and found that lactate dehydrogenase levels might be a precursor event to identify patients that would be at risk for pump thrombosis. That then actually led to a New England Journal publication and a change in that device because of that finding. Again, I think showing that a keen eye and a careful methodology can really bring real-world data to real-world evidence that can really change and advance practice.
Fantastic. And maybe to roll on at the end here to talk about what's most exciting to me is the notion that we may be looking at potentially even new ways to approach trial designs. We talk about pragmatic trials and potentially even doing trials in our registries or within our EMRs. Maybe you could share some thoughts about where the community may be moving towards because of the challenges from a cost, recruitment, oversight perspective. Do you see this as sort of the future going forward, at least for some of our trials?
Yeah, I share your enthusiasm here. I think this is really represents the frontier for real-world evidence, whether we can use real-world evidence to conduct randomized trials. And I think one important area for us to think about is the fact that people dissociate randomization and real-world evidence. They think that if the word randomized is in there, then it can't be real-world. And in point of fact, that's actually not the case. And randomization is a tool to minimize bias, to minimize confounding. And that can be applied in a traditional clinical trial setting, or it can be applied in a real-world setting, to your point. In fact, there are a number of very important examples of very high-quality clinical trials that have been done within registries or even in the electronic health record that I think are notable and kind of worth highlighting. So the first is the TASTE trial, which was answering a very important question regarding the optimal management of patients with ST segment elevation myocardial infarction, specifically whether these patients should have routine intracoronary thrombus aspiration to go along with their primary PCI and, of course, their adjunctive pharmacotherapy. This trial was conducted in Sweden, embedded within their national registry, which consecutively enrolls all patients with acute MI, for which they also have longitudinal follow-up through their administrative infrastructure. The trial enrolled over 7,000 patients, found that routine thrombus aspiration was not beneficial, and I thought was a very important finding for a very important clinical question. Of note, there was another traditional trial that was asking the same question that came out 2 years later, funded by Canada, and a device manufacturer that actually showed the exact same finding. The notable point being that the traditional randomized trial cost about 30 times more than the registry randomized trial, and of course they had the same ultimate answer. And I guess one other one to highlight for our listeners, because it'll be coming out soon, and again it's very, very important, is the adaptable trial run through PCORI, where they're using the EHR to actually answer a very important foundational question for optimizing secondary prevention amongst patients with known atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, namely, what is the optimal dose of aspirin to optimize risk and benefit? And that trial is actually being conducted through EHR, and we're very keenly awaiting the results of that. Again, both because it's going to answer a very important clinical question, but two, I think stimulates and invigorates the field that there are lots of questions that we could be asking and answering, leveraging real-world data and real-world evidence.
Nihar, this has been great. You've given our listeners a great overview about the opportunities and the challenges of real-world evidence, the perspectives of where our registries and other real-world data sets can be utilized to answer important questions, and I really think this is the tip of the iceberg. I really appreciate your time today.
Thanks so much, Ty.